everyone, and welcome to Thursday. This is First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter with wit and wisdom to start his morning off right. Thank you, C. This is Nick Wright. We've got a fun show for you today. We'll talk some football. Tom Brady's counting down the days till Gronk is back. We'll talk some basketball. Jimmy Butler didn't have the Sixers debut he wanted. And we're going to talk milestones, where we start in Los Angeles with LeBron James.
Drop hammers on him, Jenna, like LeBron did.
LeBron was pretty good last night. Of course, it depends on your definition of good. He had 44 points. He had 10 rebounds. He had 9 assists in a big win over the Blazers. He passed Wilt Chamberlain for 5th on the all-time scoring list. And you could hear MVP chants throughout the Staples Center if you watch the game. Yeah, I'd say he was good. Mm-hmm. The other story in this one, not as pleasant. Rajon Rondo out a few weeks with a broken hand. We will get to that, but we will start with the Kang, because what a night he had last night. And boy, did he impress everyone at the Staples Center. Nick, how impressive was LeBron's night?
This is the best game LeBron's played all year. It's the best game I think he's played since game one of the NBA Finals, a game where, oddly enough, afterwards he broke his hand, and in this game, Rajon Rondo breaks his hand. This was LeBron not only fully engaged, LeBron having a higher usage rate. I'm sure once we see the final advanced numbers, we'll see the ball was in his hand more than it's been in many games throughout this season.
Yes.
But also, when you see LeBron scored 40-plus, even if you didn't watch the game, and I know it was a 10:30 East Coast start, so if you're watching right now, you might not have watched it. You know one thing happened. His jump shot was falling. Like, listen, LeBron, if his jump shot is not falling, is going to score around 25 points. And if his jump shot is falling, he's going to score 35-plus. That is what has been the case almost the entirety of his career, certainly the last decade of his career. His jump shot was falling last night, and it was his jump shot that turned this game around. See, that the Lakers were down in the second quarter significantly. It was 45-32. Portland, halfway through the second. The Lakers finished the second quarter on a 27-11 run that was punctuated by a LeBron 30-footer and then a LeBron 28-footer to close out the second quarter, and then they dominated from there. He was great on both ends. I think 3 blocks to go along with the offensive performance. But the biggest story was his shot was falling. That's how he got to the 44.
His shot was falling. He was playing almost like a point guard, point forward, because he had the ball in his hand. Mm-hmm. His usage rate was way, way up. This was the most comfortable I've seen him in the Laker lineup, and it's because he had the ball in his hand as much as he did. And it's the best game that I've seen him play since the playoffs. He had a number of games in the playoffs. I think it's the irony to the broken hand in game number one was very, very similar to this game. On the defensive side, he was really, really special. As far as a help defender, as a individual ball defender, you can see he was fully engaged at this. And at the rim, he played a game like he hadn't played in a long, long time. He deflected a couple dunks at the rim during the course of the game that not only from a momentum standpoint, from these young guys, seeing one of the greatest players do it, I think he sent an overall message. If they're going to win, it's going to take that type of energy. I hadn't seen him play or be engaged like that in a long time.
And to that point, Josh Hart, after LeBron had a block at the rim, had one of his own. Josh Hart's not meeting a lot of people at the rim. I also think the opponent matters here, Jenna, because Portland, in a schedule quirk, they've played Portland 3 times already. They then play them on the final game of the regular season. But so 3 times in their first 14 games they play Portland. First game of the year, they play Portland, and Portland beats them significantly. They play them a week and a half ago, and they beat Portland by a little bit. They play them last night, and they beat Portland significantly. So with this same team, a Portland team that's very good, a Portland team that right now has the second-best record in the West, they have been almost a measuring stick. Game one, not competitive. Game two, very close game the Lakers won. Game three, the Lakers end up pulling away in the second half.
You've explained to me and to the audience the difference between what LeBron can do and what the Lakers' plan is so that he can get everyone involved. Him having the ball so much, did that deviate from the Laker plan at all, or is this the overall kind of plan, game plan, that would work both for LeBron and for getting the young guys involved?
Well, I think one of the reasons he only took 19 shots, so he had the ball in his hand a lot, but it was about the shot falling. Like, you see the 44 points, it wasn't because he took 28 shots. It was because he took 6 threes, which is about what he's averaging for the year, but instead of making 1 or 2 of them, because he'd been struggling from 3, he made 5 of them, and what that opened up for his team.
Yeah, and how those threes came. Most of those threes threes came in a pick and roll. And they were going underneath the screen, and LeBron was just stepping back, just pulling it. Now, a couple of times, he was feeling so good, he came across midcourt, just took two bounces, and let it launch. So he was feeling his jump shot, and it was necessary to how they were playing, and it did open up the court for
and
the Lakers.
And I know we're going to talk more about the Wilt milestone later. I also got the feeling, once he got hot in the second quarter, LeBron knew, if I get to 39, I pass Wilt.
You think he knew that?
Oh, I'm certain he knew it. And so, like,
Well, it's almost impossible because as a team, the Lakers, they have printed stuff coming up.
Yeah.
The players read it. LeBron knows where he's at on a lot of these categories, when he can get closer. Now, if he was 100 points away, it wouldn't have been brought to his attention. But it's in his normal studying for the game plan that he would know this number.
And so I don't think he went into the game saying, this is the game I pass Wilt. But once he had the second quarter and then the third quarter that he had, I think it was clear, oh, this is going to be the game I pass Wilt.
And then to get it on the free throw, which was
that was nice.
Very, very nice. All right, we should talk about Rajon Rondo. How concerning are you about this if he does have to miss significant time?
Well, Rondo's a big part of what they're doing. And yesterday didn't have the spectacular game, but his overall leadership, his knowledge of basketball, LeBron James is very comfortable with Rondo on the court in critical moments. And the Lakers don't have the luxury where they have Lonzo, he's ready to take over the team and play 40 minutes and can be effective in all parts of his game. They need to platoon that position if they're going to compete, especially with the best point guards in the West. They have to have a Rondo who's healthy because Lonzo's not ready to fill that void and do it by himself yet.
Here's the positive from Rondo being out. And you guys know Rondo was the offseason addition after LeBron that I liked the most, more than I liked JaVale or Lance, certainly Beasley, who's not even in the rotation. I really like the addition of Rondo. I would be much more concerned for the Lakers if it was Lonzo missing a month, even though Rondo right now is better than Lonzo.
Oh.
Because Lonzo needs the time. And now Lonzo's going to be forced into it in a softer part of their schedule. Also, you can now carve out a few more minutes of Brandon Ingram at point guard, which because he's so tall seems odd, but he's a good playmaker in spurts in that role. I want to see how this team adjusts without Rondo and LeBron having this night compounded with Rondo now being out, you're going to see LeBron having to do more.
Yes.
And that's good for the team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there have been times where if you're a basketball bettor, you see a teammate of a great player go down, and that team actually become a bigger favorite. Because what that means is in that night's game, their best players are going to get the ball more,
yes,
have to do more. In this time, I think this will maybe get LeBron more quickly fully locked into the season. And it is an important opportunity for Lonzo because we haven't seen the jump from year one to year two for Lonzo. A lot of people have thought that's because he's not playing as many minutes. He had the injury. Okay, so now Lonzo, it's important that he play a quality 30-some minutes a night.
We can admit that LeBron James had a great game last night. Would you look at this Laker team and said, this is a good team? The way they played last night, would you say, that is a good team? If they could just hone that, they'll be all right?
They have the chance to be good. They have the potential to be good, but they have to be more consistent on the defensive end. They have to be able to get some type of shot making to build space to court. A lot of that came from LeBron last night. And Tyson Chandler being there, it's a great sign. He's doing great things in the minutes that he's playing. He did fill a void. So they do have the potential. Right now, they're just a little above 500. They have the potential to be a good team.
It is worth noting, though, right now, the Western Conference, it's very clear who the four best teams in the East are going to be. We know. We don't know the order, but we know it's going to be Toronto, Philly, Milwaukee, and Boston. The West, it's Golden State, Portland, and some question marks. And Portland, I even would include in the question marks. The Lakers now, having won 6 of 7, they're one game out of the third seed in the West. So despite the slow start, they're only one game back of a round where a lot of people thought their ceiling of finish in the West was. And then, I mean, Orlando, Miami, Cleveland, the Orlando again in their next 5 games. So they have the opportunity to compile a bunch of
wins. Be careful with Orlando. They were a little tough for your boys last night.
Yeah,
they were tough on Philly.
It's no easy win there in Disney.
You're right about that.
Big night for LeBron James, and we will discuss so much more over the course of the next 3 hours. Coming up here, though, is tonight a must-win for the Green Bay Packers. Talk some football next. First things first.
Ever wonder how to get the hottest new sneakers, the ones that barely hit shelves? The answer, StockX, a revolutionary new marketplace for buying and selling 100% authentic sneakers, streetwear, watches, and handbags. Millions are already using StockX to find everything after it sells out, from the latest Yeezys to every retro Jordan to the hottest new streetwear from brands like Supreme and Bape. It even allows users to buy and sell pre-owned, excellent condition, luxury handbags and watches from brands like Louis Vuitton, Chanel, Gucci, Rolex, Omega, Tudor, and more. It uses the same principles as the stock market to make buying and selling as safe and easy as possible. You get real-time market data for intelligent buying and selling. It gives you access to tons of historical price data as well. See exactly how much an item has sold for in the past and how much it's selling for now, because it's crucial in knowing the value of the items you're buying. So go to StockX.com/FTF. That's StockX.com/FTF. StockX. Now you know.
We'll get to Thursday Night Football in a second, but first, check out these plays presented by Geico. Eastern Michigan, and Zion Williamson.
I mean, Zion had some moments last night. This guy, I'm speechless, and he got 40 games left. I'm running out of words to describe him, man.
We've never seen an athlete like him. Just try that. Amazing. 45-inch vertical, 280 pounds, 6'7". Imagine J.J. Watt as a college basketball player. He's a little taller.
That's a great way to describe it.
Yeah. Now, the meat's packed a little bit different.
Is it like Antonio Gates? If he could jump.
Man, Antonio Gates.
I know he couldn't, but I'm saying size. Yeah. I'm just saying size.
All right.
No. Antonio Gates wish.
Mavericks, Jazz, and Luka.
Trick him.
Fake makes Rudy Gobert look the other way.
Oh. Eat that, Stifel Tower.
Now, he's a special player now.
Man, I'm telling you, man, this guy, he's going to go down.
Say it, Nick. Say you told me.
You put me on the corner.
You had me watching the grainy European film. You put me on.
But I'm not. That's not even my point. My point is he has the chance to be one of the greatest non-American-born players ever.
Yeah, but these points, you have to mention it there, because it's not going to be a lot of times you're going to talk about sports and be like, I told you, Chris.
Okay, you're
That's
right.
the one time you got
oh,
it.
Oh, the one
you got
time.
You got to be able to hammer that point
Lakers,
in.
Lakers, Blazers, you, LeBron meets Nick Stauskas at the rim and rejects his dunk attempt.
I remember once upon a time folks said LeBron can't play no defense. That was a fun storyline for a few weeks. Eat that, Stauskas.
No, he was engaged last night. He was going for it. Two left-handed blocks on closeouts.
Mate.
Good help defense.
Stauskas, fall down. Take that with you.
Time for your Subway Choice moment. Thursday Night Football on Fox. Packers, Seahawks, two franchise quarterbacks going head-to-head. Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson. I bet the rest of the teams will be there as well. Both teams sitting around 500, so a win would go a long way towards a playoff push. Chris Carter, what is the key to this matchup tonight?
Can Green Bay get to Russell Wilson? Anytime you play against Seattle, he's always under pressure. There's only one season where he's been under more pressure than he's been under this year, even though he's on pace to have some of his best numbers ever. Can Green Bay, for one time in a big spot on the road, because one of the criticisms of Green Bay and this franchise, they don't support Aaron Rodgers, especially when they go on the road and in a playoff atmosphere. So can they get to Russell Wilson, and can they force turnovers? To me, because I know what Aaron Rodgers is going to do. I have a good feeling what I think the offense is going to do. But can they get after the quarterback? Because, Nick, you said it yesterday, a surprising thing. Last week you looked at it, Tennessee was number one in defense. You look at sacks.
Green Bay sacks the opposing quarterback on a higher percentage of pass plays than any team in football, and Seattle allows sacks on a higher percentage of pass plays than any team in football. So we've heard about the immovable object, the irresistible force. This is the opposite. This is the immovable object and the super resistible force.
Right,
like, this is one team's absolute strength going up against the other team's absolute weakness, which is why for Seattle, it's so critical they get the run game going again like they did last week. I liked a lot what I saw from Rashad Penny. last week. Now, Rashad Penny's a guy they drafted in the first round, and up until last week, they had gotten nothing out of him. He was their third-string running back.
Yep, he's been struggling with injuries since the beginning. He's had a hard time transitioning into pro football.
Absolutely. But this was a lot of people thought they overdrafted him. They saw something in him they liked, and then early in his career, he had been injured and ineffective. Last week, he was pressed into service with Chris Carson being out, and he was outstanding. He had 120 yards. I want to see if they can keep that going, because the only way to keep Russell Wilson upright when you have a pass rush that is as underrated and as effective as Green Bay's and an offensive line that's as ineffective as Seattle's is if Green Bay has to worry about the running game.
Yes.
Is if they have to defend run first, pass second. Then all of a sudden Russell Wilson on the play action in particular can be effective. Then the Seattle passing game can be effective, because this Seattle team is a good story, and I give credit to the coach and the quarterback for keeping them afloat. But they haven't beat anybody all year. Nope. They got four wins against four bad football teams. Beating Green Bay would be far and away the best team they've beaten all year. They've been close. Close twice against the Rams. Mm-hmm. Close against the Bears. They've had some close games, but they don't have any quality wins yet.
All right, so we know how the Packers get to Russell Wilson, how they beat that team. We know what their weakness is. What's their strength? Is it the run game? How do they get to the Packers?
The strength of Seattle?
Yeah.
The strength of Seattle right now has been their running game. They're first in the National Football League, good in the red zone, top five team in the red zone. So also, Doug Baldwin, he's been hurt since the preseason. Yep. He's played in seven games this year, but in doing interviews this week, he talked about this is the first time that his knee hadn't felt pain in it since the offseason. So look for him to be more productive. To think to Seattle with Russell Wilson, one of the top five quarterbacks that we typically talk about in the league, that they would be 27th in passing, that right there those numbers don't seem like they go together. So look for them to try to build on that number against the Pack.
I want to talk about Rodgers for a moment, because when I was looking into this game, something jumped out at me is how can that be the case? So Rodgers has 17 touchdowns to only one interception. Right? So that's not shocking. I mean, that's even by Rodgers standards, that's low, but interception-wise, but it's not shocking. He's averaging nearly 8 yards per pass. That's a good number. He's right now 14th in the NFL in quarterback rating. So I'm like, hold on. He's throwing a lot of touchdowns. He's not throwing any picks. The reason he's so low in quarterback rating is he is 29th in completion percentage. The only quarterbacks in football that are completing a lower percentage of passes are C.J. Beathard, Josh Rosen, and Sam Darnold. Rodgers is ahead of only those guys. So I ask you this, C. Is that about his wide receivers? Is that about the young receivers not being on the same page? Because it's not like they are tops in the league in drops, so we can't just say guys have been dropping passes, but is that, when we talk about interceptions, 60% are on receivers, incompletions, has Rodgers not been as good as my eye tells me, or have his receivers not been where he thought they were going to be?
Well, one, it's a combination of three things. When you're playing with young guys, and he's had a lot of veterans around him through the years playing with, and he expressed some displeasure over some of the young guys they kept over keeping Jordy Nelson. So some of it's going to be that. Some of it's going to be the coaching staff getting used to the knee injury. He had a significant knee injury. How are we going to play with that knee injury? Because now him scrambling out of the pocket the way he used to do and be effective, he wasn't doing that the first part of the season. And the third part that I believe is, man, he's throwing the ball away. He realizes guys aren't open. I'm under duress. He's throwing the ball away at a higher rate than ever before. So those are the three components that have led to him being 27th as far as completion percentage. Right.
Is that a bad thing, throwing the ball away, having the wherewithal?
Tom Brady's doing the same thing. That's their way of trying to win. They're not going to throw a bunch of interceptions. And they realize you can throw the ball away in the NFL and still be very, very effective. They know that my guy can't get to this ball. I'm going to get rid of it. Forget the next. It's hard to continue driving, taking sacks.
Well, that's
so you would much rather them throwing the ball away than consuming all those sacks.
It's not just to avoid picks. It's the sacks. Like that, people need to recognize that drives where a team suffers a sack. I tried to look it up this week, and actually I was thinking about it. It's something I think greater than 75% of drives where there's a sack result in 0 points. I think it's closer to somewhere in the 80s. Like, if you get sacked any point in the drive, the overwhelming odds are you're not coming away with any points on that drive. And so avoiding what we see from some of the young quarterbacks in football, and it gets magnified when they're in field goal range, but at any point in the field, is taking unnecessary sacks. Mm-hmm. Taking a sack that knocks you out of scoring range, taking a sack that That's what, by the way, I thought Dak Prescott did on that end of drive, end of the first half drive against Philly, where they took the sack and then all of a sudden Philly's calling their timeouts. They ended up overcoming it to score a touchdown on that drive. But Rodgers has been throwing the ball away, I think, to prevent sacks in a way that maybe in the past with a healthy knee, he thinks I can scramble away from this.
Yes.
In this situation, he hadn't been able to. But I listen, for both of these teams, if they have any playoff hopes, they have to – they don't have to run the table the rest of the way. Both these teams have to have just one loss the rest of the way, right? So for both of them have to go 6-1 the rest of the way to have a shot at the playoffs. So I can't say this is a loser-leaves-town match where if you lose, your season's over. But whomever loses tonight to be alive would have to go undefeated the rest of the way, which for either one of these teams would be an incredible –
not easy.
Not easy at all. I favor the Packers tonight, but I think it should be a classic Packers-Seahawks game, which is very close come down to the
end. Really interesting the fact that the percentage when you get sacked on that. That's I'm going to have to look that up.
Okay. It's high 70s or low
80s. And I got your word in there, too.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, that's
Packers-Seahawks, Thursday Night Football on Fox. Coming up, are the Patriots in big trouble until they get Gronk back? Next on First Things First. Back to the show, First Things First. Our favorite guest, three-time Super Bowl champ, Mark Schlereth, is right here, right now.
You have to watch the rest of the program.
No, that is...
I am the favorite, though.
Stink is without question our favorite white former football player we have on the show. There's no question about it.
Okay.
Well, I mean, what
I'll take that.
I think he's the only one.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
Love having you.
How are you, brother?
Favorite guest. Here we go. Patriots coming off a tough loss to Tennessee last weekend.
He's our favorite Stink guest.
Among the reasons why, no Gronk. Still out nursing about 150 different ailments. He's missed three of the last four games. Well, the Pats got some good news yesterday. Rob Gronkowski is set to return next week against the Jets. When asked about it, Brady said, "We're all hoping that when he does come back, he's the same player he always is." Stink, how concerning are Gronk's injuries at this point?
Well, I mean, I think they're very concerning. I think part of it is because of the rest of your football team. You saw what happened last week in Tennessee. They matched him up. They blitzed Brady. They matched him up in man. And guys just weren't getting open. I mean... It was interesting. Right off the very first play of the game, they rolled up a corner. They threw it to the flat like they always do, expecting to be second down and four. And somebody got hit right in the lips, and it was second down and nine. They were behind the chains. It was like, you know, this is going to be a different game. So in that man situation where they pressured Brady, where they made Brady move all over the pocket, and I mean, he threw some balls away. He threw some dirt balls. He looked really bad under duress. They didn't have the guy that was matching up man-to-man and beating it consistently, getting open and giving that big target. So he becomes critical. Obviously, unless you're Chris Carter, injuries are part of the game. Like, unless you're Chris Carter. Yeah, I heard you yesterday, by the way, and I was just shaking my head over there. You're like, "Hey, man, I trained, so I didn't get hurt. I didn't expect to get hurt." I was like, "I trained. I expected to get hurt. I played hurt. I know that I was going to play hurt and I was going to play injured, but I had to play well, hurt and injured, or somebody to take my job." So we had a different mindset going into these things. But he is pivotal. His health is pivotal. He is pivotal from a matchup standpoint in the middle of the field because he is that reliable guy that you know you don't have anybody to match up with when we want to play man.
The Patriots, they don't have anyone that puts fear into the defense outside of Tom Brady. So you realize Tennessee said, "We don't fear Tom Brady, especially without Gronk and these other guys. We don't feel like they're going to get separation." So Gronk being injured, what it does to an offense. Josh McDaniels, when he's trying to draw up all these plays and everything, he knows that, man, I have a special player here. I don't have to run. I don't have to run a motion. I don't care if they play man, play zone. I have a guy who can dominate an NFL game. He's the only one on the offense. Sony Michel needs tremendous help. Josh Gordon is not a dominant player. Targeted 12 times last week. You could see him and Tom Brady weren't on the same page. Fell down on a couple routes, dropped a couple, only had four completions out of those 12 targets. So with Gronk in there, man, he puts fear into the defense. But what I worry about, when you miss practice time, when you miss all this game time, and Gronk's injuries are significant because he's got a heavy incentive-laden contract that pays for him. And part of his
be there.
His renegotiation was based on him being healthy and being available. The offensive coordinator, we start the game with all these calls. Well, as the game go on, you know, Sting, you get nicked. So your ability to be able to do what you thought you could do going into the game, it changes. How does Josh know that? Hey, I got Gronk on a choice right here. I got Gronk on a seam route. Is he going to have the burst in the fourth quarter to be able to do those things? You make it very hard on the coaching staff when you're not available, you're not dependable, and you're nicked up. So that's one of the dilemmas that they have with Gronk, him being there. How much do we use him during the game, and how much football does he really have left in him?
And this is how we know how significant the injuries were to keep him out of the games. Those $3.3 million worth of incentives that he fought for, he can't get any of them anymore.
No.
I mean, they're all dead now. He needs 70 catches. He's got 29. He needs 1,085 yards. He's got 450. He needs 9 touchdowns. He's got 1. So, like, and he needs 80% playing time. That's officially dead. Like, even if he plays every game, every snap. So those are gone. You know he didn't want them gone. And here's the other thing we know about the Patriots. In the biggest spots, who do they go to? 87. The last AFC playoff game they lost, the one to the Broncos, that great defense, and Peyton Manning. 4th and 20, down 8, they go to Gronk. He makes one of the best plays I've ever seen in that spot. Then, on the same drive, who do they go to for the touchdown? Gronk. Now, they end up not getting the two-point conversion. Last
year, they go away from the two-point conversion?
Gronk, right?
Yeah, he missed him because he was seeing ghosts.
Right, they missed Gronk.
Again, that's pressure, yeah.
But then the Pittsburgh game last year, their biggest game of the season, the game that was going to determine home field advantage. You remember the final drive of the game? Gronk, Gronk, Gronk to go score. This year against the Chiefs, when Gronk had been basically a non-factor throughout the game, even though they're scoring all those points, the two big plays down the stretch, who do they go to? Gronk. Like, there's a reason that since he's been drafted, they've won 12 games every year. Like, there's a reason that since he's been drafted, they've been to 4 Super Bowls. I know one of those years he was injured during the playoff run. He's not the only reason, but he has been, the key offensive reason other than Tom Brady. And at this point, we are seeing that Tom Brady can beat you with his brain, and Tom Brady can beat you in the clutch moments. When everyone else shrinks, he gets bigger still. But over the course of the game, Tom Brady's not beating you with his arm. Tom Brady's not beating you physically. Like, he needs some guys that can flat out beat their man. Gronk's his number one option for that, and he's missed him this last month.
Is this another season where Gronk is just battling injuries, or are we starting to see maybe the beginning of, I don't want to say the end, but the beginning of, hey, I can't hold up. I don't have the durability anymore.
Well, I think for most humans that play this game, that's what ends up happening to you. There are a few guys that are exceptions to the rule, but what I know about the body, and having dealt with a lot of injuries, is your body's a great compensation machine. That's how it's designed. So when one thing starts to bother you, even subconsciously, when something you know is not right is bothering you, the rest of your body makes up for it. And it puts stress on places that you didn't think.
Yeah, to its detriment.
Right. And so you'll have a calf on one leg, and you'll compensate for that calf, and the next thing you know, you've got an Achilles on the opposite leg, or you've got a hip, or you've got – and it's just it's a vicious cycle of once I get one thing healthy, something else breaks down because the rest of my body has to overcompensate for what's going wrong. And I think that's what ends up happening to a lot of guys late in their careers is everything starts to fall apart.
Bill Belichick is typically right, and he's typically right earlier than we are as the public as far as watching football players, seeing when the value has maybe potentially left them and getting out before them. There's a reason why they did not give him a contract extension. And they gave him the ability, if you're here, you're going to earn them. But they were right again. They was hoping he was going to be there. If you're here, we're going to give you this $3 million. But they were betting on it. That's why you put the incentives in there. They were betting that his health is going to fail him, and his days in New England, they are numbered. Bill Belichick doesn't have anybody on his roster like him. Who else he got on the roster like that? Someone now who typically he's already past the peak of his career. He'll never be able to reach the mark that he was at a couple years ago, and he wants more money. And now you're starting to talk about, I got all these other outside interests. Oh, yeah, this is exactly when Bill Belichick typically gets off and start trying to sponsor you as a player.
Regardless of what his relationship is with the player.
Man, he ain't got no relationship with no players.
Right. We talked about Vrabel when he let Vrabel go.
I had a buddy of mine I played college and pro football with. Sat in the meetings with Bill Belichick right next to him for a whole year. He did not say, I'm talking about an accomplished NFL player. Guy played double digits. A guy can play multiple positions. Did not say hi to him all year. So, Gronk, man, please, miss me with that one.
and when we talk about Gronk, like, this is why. At least when I evaluate guys in their totality of their career, in contact sports, throw baseball out for a minute because the risk of injury is so much lower except for pitchers. But in football and to a lesser extent basketball, how long you can do it is such a huge percentage of how great you ultimately are. Like, I was looking at DeMarco Murray yesterday because you and I were talking about him. Man, DeMarco Murray had 1,800 yards 1 year in Dallas. He went to Tennessee, and give him credit, he nearly had 1,300 1 year in Tennessee. But he was finished. He's 30 years old. He's doing broadcasting. He played 7 years in this league. Like, the ability to play football for more than 7 or 8 years at a high level
right. Is
so hard. It's one of the reasons why I get a little, when people say Rob Gronkowski is the greatest tight end ever, well, he might have the highest peak of any tight end ever, but Tony did it for damn near 20 years. Shannon did it for 15 years. Like, the ability to do it for such a long period of time.
And that's the reason why no one will ever pass Jerry Rice as a wide receiver. No one will reach the excellence, and no one will reach the longevity that he was able to stay in this prime. If we're talking about the best of the best, duration of doing it, it's got to be included.
It's a huge part.
I mean, a guy can't have 2 or 3 seasons. Man, when you're talking about, when you are a perennial Pro Bowler, every year they are double teaming you, trying to take you out of the game, and you keep doing it even though they know you're coming, there should be something given for that. So, absolutely. You can't compare a guy who played 7, 8, 9, 10 years compared to a guy who played 15, 16 doing the same thing. You've been doing it. You know that. You have to reward people for their ability to be healthy and to be available. Being available is a skill. It's just like being able to shoot. It's just like being able to your strength. It's just like being able to catch the ball. It is a skill. And I'm sorry, Stinker, that I had.
I was available. I was just injured.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you have to understand that you had owies and you had injuries and you had things. You were available because you could play through those things. And it's more important, you have to play. If you want to play for a long time, you got to play injured. But you got to play well injured.
Right.
Like, there's a lot of guys that don't play well injured.
That's true.
Like, they can't handle it. Like, you have to play well injured. And if you can't play well injured, we will find somebody else who can. That's the league.
Your job was so much more painful than our job every day.
Oh,
we don't have to take
until now, because now we got to work with them.
Nick, can you write that down for Jenna?
No problem.
What he just said.
Absolutely.
We got to play.
Stick around, Schlereth. Well, coming up. Are the Eagles in desperation mode?
What about the sniffles?
Listen, I had the flu.
Oh, the flu. She's had it 7 times. Get a shot, Jenna.
The flu, Mark.
What about them crack sneezes?
No, they're not crack sneezes.
What are they?
The fight for the college football playoffs is on, starting with number 4 Michigan against Indiana on FS1. Then in primetime, Kyler Murray and 6th-ranked Oklahoma look to make a statement against Kansas on Fox, or catch it all on the Fox Sports app. That is going to be...
Let's go, Michigan.
Good lineup.
Man, we need to get that. Also, get the 10-1. I need you 10-1 when you face the Buckeyes in closer. 2 weeks.
Okay. It would be a big letdown if Michigan loses before they face the Buckeyes.
Let's save that for us.
Sorry, Jenna, go ahead.
Stories to start your morning. LeBron reached another milestone, becoming 5th all-time in points, passing a guy by the name of Wilt Chamberlain. Now he just needs 868 more points to pass Michael Jordan for 4th place. At this pace, he'd probably get there by January. Nick, how impressive has this accomplishment been?
I mean, listen, LeBron's going to finish as the all-time leading scorer and 3rd all-time in assists. That's what's going to happen. A guy who is a pass-first player is going to finish with more points than anybody. But passing Wilt, passing the most prolific scorer the NBA had ever seen until Kareem came along, it's a hell of an accomplishment, and it's almost just a footnote in the game last night.
It's amazing. I'm going back to the press conference in the Nike commercial in 2003. Hey, little kid, you feeling any pressure? Nah, no pressure. 16 years later... 5th in the NBA. I mean, the name's on the list. You talk about the assist, everything, and being the only unselfish player on that list.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I've got something for you later about where the other guys in the top six rank all time in assists.
It's pretty special.
It's an interesting.
Yeah, they don't like to pass the ball to get on that list.
Nah.
All right, moving on to Steph Curry. He is out at least the next 10 days, but will join the Warriors on their road trip. It might be to help keep some calm in that locker room following recent flare tempers, or it could just be because he's adorable. Probably the first one, though. Nick, will this help quiet the drama around the Warriors?
Yeah, Steph Curry, NBA MVP and all-NBA chaperone, evidently. They said Steph wasn't there. Everything went to hell. Steph, even though you ain't playing, you going on this road trip because we need you to supervise these other rapscallions we got here. No, I think it's a good move by them.
Steph is the most stable. Steph is the oldest. Steph, it's his franchise. It's not Draymond's franchise. It's not KD's franchise. It's not Klay's franchise. Klay's sitting right there in this chaos like, wondering what's going on. Hey, man, won't y'all chill out, man? Relax a little bit. Get your little medication off in your system. The reason why we need Steph there is because that picture right there, we do not need Draymond and Boogie Cousins coming together. No, Steph, we need you, baby. We need you. We need a voice of reason. It's the best for the franchise, and that's the reason why Steph.
Boogie Cousins, your voice. The reason you need a new voice.
You need now two voices of reason. Lamar Jackson could make his first start this weekend against the Bengals. That after Joe Flacco missed practice yesterday with a hip injury. Lamar has played in five games in some Wildcat packages for the Ravens, but has only thrown seven passes. See, what are reasonable expectations if Lamar does get this start?
Well, Christmas came a little early to him in two different forms, Jenna. Joe Flacco getting nicked where he's not able to practice. That Lamar Jackson, he's going to be their only answer at quarterback. And number two, man, Santa Claus came down the chimney and unraveled a bag called the Cincinnati defense. Now, if I'm going to play an NFL game, he's going to feel like he's back at Louisville. Yeah. But how bad they tackle and how bad they play pass defense, this is the kind of game you want to build, get your first NFL start.
Well, you look at them and go watch what New Orleans did, but watch what the backup quarterback Hill did. That kid is a football playing Jesse, and they ran some stuff. Quarterback, they ran him at tight end, but they ran all the read option stuff, the zone option stuff. He lined up at every position. But I'm telling you,
stuff they did with Hill, Lamar can do
absolutely 100%. And Lamar is a guy that certainly athletically he's going to make you question yourself a little bit.
All right, finally, Joey Bosa returned to practice yesterday. The Pro Bowl defensive end has not played this season due to a foot injury. Stink, how big is this for the Chargers?
It's huge. You know what? The injury's been huge for the Chargers in that they've developed a bunch of depth.
Yes.
You know, the big thing about Joey Bosa being out is they have, and I talked to their D coordinator, Gus Bradley, last week as I did the game. They have developed, I've got a rotation of eight guys up front that are contributing. Guys that they had, the Filons of the world and the Squares of the world, who have become very good players for them that they weren't expecting to develop like that because of Joey Bosa's absence. So they have this ancillary benefit of we've developed a bunch of depth and some really good players that we didn't realize or we didn't count on going into this thing. So it's actually been a blessing in disguise. Now they get Bosa back, who is the best player on their defense. I don't know if he'll be back this week or next week, but he's trending that way. This is a really good thing for them.
You make a great point because we knew that Melvin Ingram was an excellent pass rusher. We thought the Chargers might have the best pair of pass rushers in football with Bosa and Ingram. I didn't know about Isaac Rochelle.
Yeah.
You mentioned Square, Filon, all these guys that have 2.5, 3.5, 4.5 sacks. Like Derwin James also has a bunch of sacks, but he's doing it out of the safety position. But listen, the Chargers are a scary team if he comes back healthy. They're a relatively scary team even without it. But Phillip Rivers playing the best football of his career. Melvin Gordon is playing at a level higher than I thought he could. The defense, they got the rookie that's playing better than any rookie either side of the ball is Derwin James. Mm-hmm. He's playing like a pro bowler right now. To add a guy that was my pick for defensive player of the year and it wasn't an off-the-board pick, that would be huge. I don't know what the foot injury, I know with all the things you've told me about, about how pass rushers and pressing off, going off one leg, how effective he'll be. But if they get a full strength Joey Bosa back, that is a legitimate Super Bowl contender.
Yeah, no team, if we look at the better teams in the league, and as you start coming down the stretch, every team's going to hit that wall. But teams are looking for a lift, looking for a spark. And I thought you brought up a great point as far as who's coaching that defense. People have forgotten because he didn't have success in Jacksonville. You talking about a great defensive mind? Yeah. That's Gus Bradley and with the Chargers. So now he's got all this the same way he did in Seattle. He was just throwing bodies, talented bodies at that quarterback. That's what the Chargers are going to be doing down the stretch. Joey Bosa's a sack machine. He's always been a sack machine in high school when I coached him in Florida. When he went to Ohio State, he's a sack machine there. And now he's one of the best pass rushers we have in the league. But he has the unique ability. He can play inside. He can play outside. Slarif, I think that they should start him off slow, passing situations only. He's great against the run, but I would put some reps at defensive tackle, because when you have foot injuries, and I had a serious foot injury earlier in my career, as a defensive end, you have a elongated stride, and typically you're on one foot and leaning. And if you put that pressure on that left foot, which he's having the problem, they diagnosed 3 months ago as a bone bruise. Let me tell you something. I need another doctor. And anytime you're dealing with the Chargers, be wary of their doctors and what they do to the players. So I would try to play him a little more inside, where the guys are on 2 feet and stabilize as a defensive tackle, compared to being on the edge and be elongated and trying to make that tough turn, you know, play after play.
Turning corners. One thing about playing on the outside, on the edges, man, there is space out there. We call it playing in the water. Mm-hmm. I don't want to play in the water. Put me in the concrete. Put me inside where the game is right here. It's face-to-face. You get outside on the edge, and that's time, that's space, that's hard to do. Defensive ends turn corners. They've got to work him in here slowly. It's interesting that you brought it up, because Corey Legit, who's playing really good right now for them, he had the PED suspension.
Yes.
He had surgery in the offseason because he knew he had the suspension on his foot. And that is what has that has changed his career, because he's been playing with a bad foot for a while. They fixed it because they knew he's going to be out for 4 weeks, and he came back, and he has been legit.
Mm-hmm.
But he's been great for the last couple of weeks.
Don't let the Chargers get good doctors and good kickers. They win Super Bowl every year.
Yeah, really. All right, let's move on to the Eagles. Now they're sitting at 4-5 with their playoff hopes on the brink, and just for good measure, they head to New Orleans to play the league's hottest team, the Saints, this Sunday. So there's that. The team's woes, though, you can't pin them on Carson Wentz. The guy's been lights out for the Eagles, and he's not pushing the proverbial panic button just yet.
We realize where we're at. You know, we realize where the division's at. You know, we don't want to overthink anything. We know we got a tough matchup against the Saints, a great team that's playing, you know, really good football right now. They're hot right now. And I don't want to throw the word desperate around, but you know, we realize where we're at and we're cognizant of it. But we're going to go down there and give it our best effort. We haven't gotten it done every week, and we got to find a way to figure that out. But you know, the urgency is really always there. This is the National Football League, and every week is crucial and important. And like I said, we know where we're at, but we're just going to take it 1 week at a time.
Stink, 3 games into the season, we said, what's the deal with the Philadelphia? What's their identity? Who do they want to be? Five games in, we said, what's the deal with the Eagles? Like, what is their identity? Yeah. Who do they want to be? So now we're you know, past the halfway mark. We still don't really know what their identity is. Do you trust this Eagles team?
Well, no, I don't trust them. And you should have your finger on the panic button. Absolutely, I don't trust them. You know, it's really interesting, because you win a championship, and it's not necessarily the stars that you know, you think, oh, we're going to lose stars or mm-hmm. It's not necessarily the stars on your team. If you listen to center Jason Kelce talk, he talks about all the ancillary players. He talks about the Celics of the world. He talks about the Torrey Smiths of the mm-hmm. world, the professionals of the world who really brought that locker room together. Those are the guys you miss. Those guys get opportunities elsewhere, and they leave your football team. And what you don't realize, and you need to realize as an organization, is some of those guys are the glue guys that hold the locker room together, that bind the defense to the offense. You know, we always talk about availability being a skill, and people say, hey, the best ability is availability. The best ability is accountability, being accountable to one another, being accountable to each other, being responsible for one another. And when you lose some of that, you lose some of those core guys on a football team, it's absolutely amazing how it affects that locker room. And, you know, it's so interesting, because you put, and you've been there, you put 53 guys together. You're going to have, you got 5 guys who are touched that need to be babysat, right? Mm-hmm. And you have to have this ratio, and it's amazing, the gravitational pull when you have professionals. You can have a locker room full of professionals. If you get more than that 4 or 5 guys that are a little bit over off the reservation on the other side a little bit, you get six, seven of those guys. The gravitational pull of guys going from the professional side to crossing the line to not so professional, it's amazing what it does to your football team. So those are the things that you look at and you wonder why teams have these, you know, these drop-offs after they win championships. And I understand injuries and all those things, but you start losing some of those valuable guys that nobody really knows the name. That special teams dude that gives you a look in practice that, that you wouldn't get otherwise, and he gets a chance to go elsewhere. That's what happens to you.
Yeah, that connective tissue that goes with championships, it's hard to buy it when you're trying to put a roster together because the experience that players have in the journey, it's a once-in-a-lifetime experience. You can't bottle it up. Like when they were at the parade, they couldn't bottle that up. They thought they could. Right. That's what they thought New England does. New England bottles this thing up, and they break it out every year. No, they don't. They recapture it every year. They start from scratch, all right? They don't take it for granted. They don't think that they have it figured out. But there's two components, I believe, that have affected the Eagles and the reason why we can't trust them. One is those players like Torrey Smith, those players that were on that once-in-a-lifetime journey, those things that you can't pinpoint. Nick Foles assuming the responsibility of being the starter and stepping up those last two games of the season. The other thing is, man, they missed those coaches, man.
Yeah.
They missed John DeFilippo, the quarterback coach, who was talking in his ear, even though the quarterback's playing well. What about the play calling? What about our third down package? What about relieving that burden from Doug, who's a first-time head
coach? How much NFL experience walked out the door?
Yeah, and Frank Wright. Man, Frank Wright's one of the best human beings. Yeah. He's a great football coach. You think he's not missing? You think you listen to Doug Peterson's press conference. You think he don't miss some type of lieutenant to be able to whisper in his ear? Hey, buddy, you know something? Don't stress out about this. We're going to be all right. Because last year, that's what they did when Carson got hurt. So Stink hits it right on the head. Those players with those intangible qualities that make a team and make a season special, that Stink would know. He's done it with a couple different organizations. Those players are important. And every winner, you're going to lose coaches. And those things we have seen, the Eagles, they have led to their detriment in 2018.
Yeah, I mean, how important Frank Wright? Go ask Andrew Luck, who, come after missing a year of football, all of a sudden is playing the best football of his career. And I know it's 2018. Everyone's putting up great numbers.
And I know the general manager of the Colts, he wanted Josh McDaniel. And they thought that there were more qualified candidates for Frank Wright. But he trusted Frank Wright. That's what he told one of my sources and said, the reason why we hired Frank, not because he was the best. He said, I trust him as a coach and to do the right thing, Nick.
So when it comes to the Eagles in 2018, you know how they make a hell of a lot more sense when you're thinking about last year? Just convince yourself Julio caught that ball in the divisional playoff game, and they lose 16-15. Julio, there wasn't the fourth down, goal line, down 15-10. They throw it into the end zone, Atlanta does, and Julio almost comes down with it. He doesn't, and then they go on this two-game run that was spectacular. And that's why this year's been so confusing, because we saw what they did with backups. We saw what they did with Nick Foles. We saw them beat the brakes off a Vikings team that was excellent and then go toe-to-toe with the Patriots and outlast them. That's why you can't figure, if that's who you are, how do you lose your biggest game of the year to a Cowboys team that was right, that was ready to be knocked out? Makes a lot more sense. Oh, Philly, they couldn't even get out of their first playoff game once Carson Wentz went down. Like, then you know what they remind you of? That Raider team a couple years ago that was having a great season, their quarterback went down, one and done in the playoffs, and then the next year took a step back. I know that's not what happened, but that you almost have to convince yourself that is what happened to make sense of what is happening this year.
Right. Stink, and I'm sure Stink will potentially have the same opinion. You've been in the NFL a long time, and you will never understand. You guys have covered the NFL a long time. You're never going to understand. Stink and I have been around it enough and covered enough that we have a deeper understanding because we've seen some of the craziest stuff happen. But young coaches and young players, they think they know the league. Philadelphia thought they knew what it was to be a champion. That's why they talked all this offseason. They thought they had that down. Oh, man, we're having fun. Oh, it's great to play for this organization. Okay, be careful. You don't know as much as you understand. A lot of times we see players, we see coaches, they've been around the league one or two times. They think, oh, I understand this. No, you don't understand pro football. And they are getting a lesson this year of what it's like to be a champion, Stink.
No, there's no question. Everybody, you've got a target. You know, it's really, I tell you what, it's easier to deal in life in general with failure than it is success. Because success, when you have it, you know what? You take it for granted. It's easy. Like, the good times in my life, you know what? I'm so busy patting myself on the back, right, that I don't really ever learn anything.
Don't get better.
Right. It's the tough times in my life, the tough things that have happened to me, where I have learned a lot about myself, a lot about the people that I surround myself with. Those are the times that have been expansive in my life, where I've learned and I've grown as a person. During the good times, man, I'm too busy congratulating myself.
Yeah. I'm ripped.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I'm yoked.
You are yoked. Stick around. Let's talk much more about yokes and other things. Coming up, is tonight a must win for the Green Bay Packers? Next on First Things First. Back here with Mark Schlereth, Thursday Night Football tonight on Fox. Packers and Seahawks. Two franchise quarterbacks going head-to-head, Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson. Both teams sitting around 500, so a win would go a long way towards a playoff push. Stink, break this down for us. What's the key to this matchup tonight?
There's so many keys. I think, you know, one of the things that you look at when you're talking about the Seahawks, and one of the things you have to do is it's the off-scheduled stuff that ends up being the big touchdown stuff, mm-hmm. in my mind. They're the number one team in the league as far as rushing the ball is concerned. But it's the off-scheduled stuff, and you talked earlier about the Packers' pass rush and how good they are. I think one of the things that I've seen teams do well against the Seahawks is if you don't stay within rush lanes, if you don't constrict the pocket and basically like a boa constrictor, squeeze Russell Wilson into the middle of that thing and you get pressure from all edges, then you're in trouble. If you get one guy that's consistently up the field pressuring Russell Wilson, that's when it gives him the opportunity to escape either right or left. And when he is on the move, he is absolutely deadly accurate. He is great on the move. And that's where the off-schedule big plays happen. The teams that have done a great job of eliminating the big mm-hmm. plays, the off-schedule plays, have been able to constrict him and make him essentially tackle him or sack him, but essentially don't let him out of that pass rush. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things the Packers are going to have to do a great job of constricting that pocket and making him throw the ball, making him beat you out of the pocket.
So the point you're making about the Packers' pass rush and what you can do to Seattle what Seattle can do to you if they can avoid the pass rush,
right,
well taken. What I'm curious about watching this game is if Seattle is going to be able to have the discipline they showed last week, which was even in the face of being down 12, even after the strip sack that led to the score late mm-hmm. in the game, they still were running the ball. You said you went back and rewatched it yesterday.
Yeah.
They were down mm-hmm. 12, 5 minutes left, still handing the ball
off.
Seattle stayed true to it. And that's, I understand they lost that game, just like they lost the other game they played to the Rams. But you could argue the best two games they've played all year have been the two games against the Rams, even though they were losses. Will they be able to stay committed to the rushing game in this football game?
Here's the thing. Brian Schottenheimer understands this about his football team. If he doesn't, his quarterback's going to take a beating.
Mm-hmm.
He understands the complementary nature of what they're doing and that they are not wired. They're not good enough up front to stand there and throw it 45, 50 times because they'll get exposed. So he understands that aspect of it. He understands also, and Russell Wilson has not run the ball very much. You look at his numbers running the ball. Career low this year. But when you watch him, and I've called a couple of games, it's the threat. It's the RPO threat that essentially what happens is that backside of a defense does not constrict. They are so afraid of Russell Wilson holding that ball that's opening up cutback lanes because nobody constricts. And the second you do, you get Russell Wilson on the edge on that stuff with a run-pass option, and
so
they'll cut you up. So that's why they're running the ball so effectively.
That's one of the things we've seen for years in Carolina. One of the reasons they've had effective running outside of Cam's numbers is because they have to have someone dedicated to Cam.
Right.
I saw Carolina played terribly on last Thursday against the Steelers, but if you can remember that first drive of the game, Cam hardly ran the ball, but Christian McCaffrey was having huge holes because a defensive end was dedicating himself to Cam. That's what you're saying defenses are consistently doing against Russell Wilson, and I would imagine also, when's the last time Russell Wilson played, 2-man? Like, probably never.
They can't play
you
that against
him. You can't play it against him ever because you're going to have – corners going to turn their back to him. He'll be able to run. So you have a limited number of defenses and defensive looks you can make him deal with, I would imagine, going into tonight's game if you're Green Bay.
Yeah, I think the thing that's most important is one of the things you said earlier about Aaron Rodgers. You had mentioned earlier, too, this year we're getting more throwaway passes from quarterbacks. Aaron Rodgers, you mentioned, has 14 more than any other quarterback.
17, actually.
17 more.
Joe Flacco is second there. Well, why would Aaron Rodgers, in an era that we are calling the easiest passing era ever, not only Aaron Rodgers, low 27th in completion percentage. Tom Brady's on that list, too. Very, very close. Why would our two greatest quarterbacks be struggling when it's easier to throw the ball? Aaron Rodgers, one was the knee injury. Other one was lack of chemistry with the wide receivers on the outside. So he's not going to throw interceptions. They are utilizing throwing the ball away because, Nick, as you mentioned before, if you get sacked in the NFL, how it takes away from your scoring potential, those numbers are like the turnover numbers. Like if you lose the turnover number, you're going to lose the game. If you get sacked in a drive,
you're not scoring on the
chance of you scoring are really, really small. So I just think watch Aaron Rodgers in this game and watch to see the second half of the season. Does he improve on that number? Because 27th in the NFL, to me, is shocking from a completion standpoint for Aaron Rodgers.
I want to talk about another Aaron, the Aaron that we said was the best Packer on Sunday, Aaron Jones. Here's a number that will surprise people. Who's number one yards per carry guy in the league this year? Aaron Jones.
Yep.
Now, he hasn't gotten it as much as some of the other elite running backs in the league, but he's given you 6.7 per rush this season. I want to see, you mentioned Brian Schottenheimer knows he has to trust their running game. That's their path to victory, especially with their bad pass blockers on the offensive line. Does Mike McCarthy and the Packers staff understand that they've got to run the football, that it can't just be Aaron Rodgers? Because even though he's taken care of the football, only one interception all year, he is yet to get on the exact same page with any of his receivers other than Davante Adams. I don't think Jimmy Graham's been as big of an addition as I thought he was going to be, and those young receivers are still learning on the fly.
Aaron Rodgers understands that and said after the game, I know I didn't have a great game. I know that Aaron Jones, we have to keep going with this game plan because it worked. It's a matter of whether Mike McCarthy
The interesting thing now is, as Chris said, it is easier to throw the ball than it ever has been in this league. Every rule is bent towards throwing the ball. Can you imagine the numbers you'd be putting up right now with nobody able to touch you right now?
And so, don't get hurt.
And everybody talks about, all defensive coordinators, when you ask them, the first thing they say, oh, we got to stop the run. Man, I'm telling you what, there are nickel defenses, there are little DBs playing linebacker. Yep. They say they have to stop the run. But you know what's happening a lot? Is this is such a pass-heavy team or pass-heavy league. You know, 65, 67, it's all small people. And they're basically saying, hey, go ahead and run the ball. Go ahead and get 4 or 5 yards of carry. But we don't think that you can put 12 plays together like that and score on us. So we'll let you go up and down the field, but we're going to tighten it up in the red zone. And you look at the red zone. I mean, it's you look at single high safety all over the field. You get in the red zone, what do you get? Double high? You get all?
Yep, four across.
Yep, four across.
High safety.
Yep. The red zone changes, and they're basically saying, we'll put our big people in down there where we don't have to worry about getting beat over the top, and we're not going to let you run it.
Real quick, before you go, I just want offensive lineman's perspective. How hard will it be for Green Bay's offensive lineman in that noise in Seattle?
Oh, it's huge. It's all silent. It takes away the snap count advantage that you have. It's silent cadence, which you never off on the ball on time. The issue is they've got one guy in my mind in Seattle that's a really outstanding pass rusher, what's the cat's name? Frank Clark. Thank you. Frank Clark is the one guy to me that's a difference maker on their defensive line from a pass rushing.
Watch the center from Green Bay and watch how many different snap counts. Initially, you're gonna have a silent snap count. So watch him when he puts his head up. When he puts his head down, does he go 1,000, 1,002? Because that's what the defense does. Now, them offensive linemen, Stink is a smart one, but they ain't real, real smart and sophisticated on that cadence. So typically it's going to be 1,001 with one head bob. Are they going to go two head bobs and then go 1,001? So watch that during the course of the game.
But it might not be a huge factor. Seattle hasn't played great at home this year. They've lost
four. But the 12 show
why.
But the fans are loud.
They do, but it hasn't really affected
them. It hasn't translated this year.
First time in the Pete Carroll era that they've had a losing streak like that.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.